Blog Talk Radio.
Wealthy Sisters is on the air. Wealthy Sisters, the show that features six and seven figure earning women of color. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Eastern Standard Time as entrepreneur, author, speaker Deborah Hartnett showcases the triumphant journey of these powerful sisters. You'll be inspired, encouraged, and informed every Monday at 12 noon Eastern Standard Time. Our call-in number is 347-838-9278 or listen live 24 hours a day at www.wealthysisters.com. Now, our host, Deborah Hartnett.
Hello and welcome to Wealthy Sisters, sponsored by The Professional Black Woman. You can visit us at www.thepbw.com. Wealthy Sisters is where we celebrate the lives of six and seven figure earning women of color, and our purpose is twofold. First, we love to inspire and encourage you, the listener, and second, we must edify, promote, acknowledge, and say thank you to the sisters for doing big things. I'm Deborah Hartnett, your host, broadcasting live on the Worldwide Blog Talk Network, and today is another Monday, May 30th, 2011, and it happens to be Memorial Day. And I hope you are as excited about your future as I am, because trust me, it is extremely bright no matter what it looks like. You know, we are here every week at the same time. That's Mondays at 12 noon Eastern. So go out and spread the good news that we are here. I tell you, today, as we just mentioned, is Memorial Day, and at first we were planning to take our time off and to take what we call a holiday or vacation time today, but, you know, we were led to do something a little different on the show, and just thinking back from my childhood, remembering this Memorial Day has always been an exciting day for me, because it represented the beginning of summer. You know, my mother cooking out, doing, I mean, she was a fabulous, oh man, she was fabulous on the grill. And yeah, I thought about, you know, the pool. This is when the pool would open and all of those things. But it wasn't until recent years that I was exposed to the military more and got to be able to meet other people who've been serving and forming careers, and just my eyes were just completely open to what the day is all about, Memorial Day, and taking time to really, really pay honor, to pay homage to those men and women who serve in the military and who have given their lives in defense and protection of our country. So today, we want to take a very special time just to acknowledge some incredible individuals and to say thank you. We have a great show planned for you. We actually are going to be featuring one powerful sister, Staff Sergeant Carletta S. Davis, out of Anchorage, Alaska. Her mother is going to be on the show with us today, sharing her story. And then also we have a phenomenal guest as well, and Miss Elaine Donnelly. She's actually over the Center for Military Readiness, and she's going to be sharing a lot of her experiences and information that she has on this. So we need you right now. You know what we tell you to do. Go out, call, text, tweet, Facebook, let everybody know that we are live at 347-838-9278. As well, you can listen to us live at www.wealthysistas.com. And remember to follow us so you can get your reminders of the show. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter as well. So when we come back after this short break, we will return and have an opportunity to speak to our first guest on the show, Miss Elaine Donnelly, who is over the Center for Military Readiness. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short break.
Business leaders, are you ready to soar? Success is not defined by your wings, but by your courage to leap from the cliff's edge and fly. With Fortune 500 expertise, the Beatty Group partners with creative and motivated leaders, weaving structure and innovation for maximum business success. Visit us at thebeattygroup.com, that's T-H-E-B-A-T-I-E, group.com, or call the Beatty Group at 877-264-7000. 7699. This segment is sponsored by WillDrake.com. That's www.willdrake.com. The hot new suspense novel, Bad and Worse, A Tale of Men, published by Permal Co-Publishing. Sometimes the only way to stop a killer is to love him. Available in stores November 2009.
Yes, good afternoon and welcome. Happy Memorial Day to all of our listeners. I want to thank you, as always, for tuning in to our show. We're so excited to have each and every one of you in the chat room. And also want to just take a special reminder to have you visit www.thepbw.com. You've got to see what's happening there. We've got the Maximizing You Tour that's going to be kicking off in a few short days. Don't want to miss it. Go to thepbw.com. Now, for our special show today, we want to just introduce to you our first guest, Ms. Elaine Donnelly, who happens to be the founder and president of the Center for Military Readiness and an independent public policy organization that specializes in military personnel issues. It was founded in 1993. CMR advocates high single standards in training and sound priorities in military social policies. Secretary of Defense Secretary Casper Weinberger appointed Ms. Donnelly to be a member of the Defense Advisory Committee on Women in the Service for a three-year term, and in 1992, President George H.W. Bush appointed her to the Presidential Commission on Assignment of Women in the Armed Forces. As a member of the DACOWITS, and the Presidential Commission, Mrs. Donnelly participated in fact-finding visits to numerous military bases all over the country, including Army's Fort Bragg, three Marine training bases, the Naval Academy, and U.S. Military Academy, just to name a few. So it is our pleasure to welcome to the show today Miss Elaine Donnelly. Hello.
Hi, good afternoon. So nice to talk with you today.
Yes, thank you for having and taking the time for coming on the show today. I know we just actually made contact this Friday, so I really appreciate you being so flexible in the time there as well.
Well, especially on Memorial Day. You know, it's customary for everyone to pause and think about all the soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marine who have given their lives, given everything for our country over the years. And when you called and said you wanted to talk about women who have made a career of the military, and in particular 123 who have been killed since the beginning of the current wars, since 9/11, I've kept a list of all their names. And it's always a sad day when I have to add another name to them. But we don't think about them too often, and you don't even read about them very often. Sometimes only the hometown newspapers will tell their stories. And every one of them are brave, courageous. They went off to serve their country, knowing that they would be at high risk in a dangerous situation. Some misunderstood when they went in, thought that, well, I won't be in danger. I'll just be in a support role. I don't think that's the case anymore. We're pretty much, I think everybody realizes everyone is in harm's way. There are differences, or at least there's supposed to be, in regulations as to how women are used in the military. Close combat is supposed to be all male. But we do know that everybody is in harm's way, and that's why we honor and respect so much the women who volunteer to serve.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you actually started this path that you're on today.
Well, Deborah, it was the same way you mentioned just a few minutes ago, meeting the military people, in the way that I did as the Defense Advisory Committee on Women in the Services, DACOWITS as it's called. That was back in the 1980s, and it's largely a committee composed of civilian women, very little exposure to the military prior to that, although my father was a submariner. And just going to those meetings several times a year, and also on my own, going to visit the military bases, and then later in 92 on the Presidential Commission. I made every base visit that I could squeeze in. You see a very, very special culture there. It's an institution unlike any other. The military is what defends this country, and it is so important that we maintain its high standards, its culture. By culture, I mean most simply how things are done. Obedience, for instance, obedience to order. This is something that we don't even see in the civilian world, nothing like it. Living far away from home in conditions of little or no privacy, always at risk. These kinds of elements, people who willingly raise their hand and volunteer to serve their country, they're making a great sacrifice, regardless of where they serve, but especially when they are in a war zone. It is such a special institution, but the problem is, and the reason I formed my organization was, that it's very vulnerable to political forces, people in political life who think that the military is like any other equal opportunity employer, that civilian concepts can be imposed on it. That's where you run into trouble. And we've seen a lot of social turmoil in the military in recent years, which we chronicle on a regular basis.
That's an amazing walk there that that you've taken, and a lot of the information that you've learned. Can you share a little bit more about your experience being appointed by the Secretary, then Defense, Caspar Weinberger, and then later President George H.W. Bush?
Yes. Well, again, the members of Dakowitz, it was a larger committee back then. There were about 30-some members, and there were military advisors who were with us all the time. And our job was to go to military bases, look for issues that were of special concern to military women. And the theory was that a civilian woman can do more to reach the top brass if something needed to be fixed. So I personally wrote a number of recommendations that I hope were helpful to military women. Back then, women in space was something that you didn't see because military women were at a disadvantage. We invited Sally Ride, the first female astronaut, to come and visit the Dakowitz, and we opened the doors for military women to have that same opportunity. 5 years later, that began, and now it's like, oh, wasn't it always that way? Back then, it wasn't. And so we got used to the idea of men and women in the military. Back then, people weren't accustomed to saying "and women" in the military. They certainly are now. We were not into the more intense issues of women in close combat, direct ground combat. That was something that, and it, frankly, it still is as far as I'm concerned, something that is not a good idea for women. They don't have an equal opportunity to survive in close combat. Physical differences are part of it, but there's more to it than that. But as we're seeing in the current wars, we've got an awful lot of women who are out there serving. They're doing extremely well, but many of them are single mothers. And the ones that trouble me the most, 17 women who are parents, not all of them single, but many of them are, with little children left behind. Yes, this troubles me. I think the nation is not really aware of it, but we've become accustomed to it. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Now, when you started the Center for Military Readiness, and it started again in, was it
1993, right. That was right after my term on the presidential commission. Let me back up just a moment. I didn't answer your question about the commission. It was established in 1992. It was the most comprehensive study and analysis of whether or not female soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines should be in direct ground combat or close combat in the Navy. And we came out with a mixed result. We were opposed to direct ground combat, such as the infantry, special operations forces, and the like. There was a split decision on Navy ships. Navy ships have since been open to women. Everything except until recently, submarines and amphibious vessels, those are pretty much gone now. Those, what we called exemptions, some called them exclusions. But during that period, that's when I had the opportunity to land on the carrier twice. I flew in an F-15. I went to Fort Bragg. I went to a prisoner of war training camp. I got jammed into a small box with a hood over my head and got a taste of what it would feel like to be a captive behind enemy lines. And that experience we brought back to the commission. The commission came out against the use of women in combat aviation, and the main reason was the prisoner of war situation and that reality that could very well happen. And for that reason, we came out with a result that a lot of people did not expect. But the law regarding combat aviation was repealed, and women are in combat aviation right now, tactical aviation. They land on carriers. They fly virtually every aircraft except for special operations forces. Again, they are very courageous, highly respected. The only problems that occur, most often, they happen because of double standards in training. And I never blame the women for that. It's usually the policymakers and the Pentagon people who try to accommodate differences in a way that creates an unreal situation. And that sometimes causes an awful lot of problem. There's also issues regarding sexuality in the military, as you know. In the Navy, one commanding officer, more than one per month for the last couple of years, has been discharged, most often due to sexual misconduct. Why does that happen? Well, because people are human, and it's something that is it's an issue in the Navy. It's one that probably is going to become even more complicated if or when this issue of homosexuality in the military goes through. That's another issue of concern to CMR. But, again, to me, to complicate standards, to create situations that encourage turbulence or misconduct or indiscipline rather than discipline, these are where the problems occur. But it's the problems with the policymakers in the Pentagon, I think, who are trying to impose an unreal situation or unrealistic goals.
So when you actually your time was served on the commission and you formed the CMR, how did you go about compiling the list that we can go to your website? It's www.cmrlink.org and find the list there of the fallen women. And we know when we mention that list. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about that list?
Let's start,
what the details are.
The first name on the list, first casualty in Iraq. We also have listed the names in Kuwait some prior to that. But PFC Lorianne Piestua, 23, she was captured and she died in captivity March 23, 2003, a mother of two children, two boys, 4 and 3 at that time. And with her was, you may remember, Jessica Lynch, the young blonde woman, 19 years old. She and Shoshana Johnson, a black woman, they were captured, and Lorianne Piestua did not survive that experience. What happened to Jessica Lynch was very interesting, because at first the news came out that she was like a female Rambo and that she had been captured and shooting the enemy until her ammunition ran out. That story, it turned out, was not true. And again, it wasn't her fault. She was unconscious and she revealed in her book that came out a year and a half later that she had been seriously abused, raped repeatedly while she was unconscious for about 3 or 4 hours in the hands of the Iraqis. Again, this was very early in the war, March 23rd, 2003. This was part of the assault on Baghdad, liberated Baghdad. She was in a support unit that was close to the infantry, but not designated to attack the enemy. But she was in harm's way. The reason that happened was because rules changed in 1981 that a lot of people didn't realize, and she did not realize, according to her family. Jessica Lynch, Lorianne Piestua, and Shoshana Johnson, they all said, but we didn't think they would be anywhere near the front line. Well, actually, they were, because the rules had changed in 1981. So Lori Piestua, best friends with Jessica Lynch, did perish. They found her when they rescued Jessica, buried in a shallow grave, she and some of the male soldiers. When I heard the news that there had been captures of American soldiers, I knew in my heart when I heard it on the radio coming home that day that one of them likely would be a woman, and indeed it was. So that's the first name that appeared on our list, PFC Lorianne Piestua. And she was captured, and Jessica Lynch was captured, but she did survive. She was sexually abused repeatedly. We know that because she was courageous enough to put that in her book, even though the Pentagon tried to convey a different story. I still have a problem with that. Why did the Pentagon allow that story to stand? They did not correct it. And my sources indicated that they knew the truth, but they did not allow the truth to come out. I just don't think that's right.
There's no wonder. I'm sure you have a whole list of maybe reasons, perhaps, of why that would take, I'm sure, probably another show or two to uncover. But tell us a little bit more about maybe one other, and then I'd like to bring on the line. I know you have information as well on Staff Sergeant Carletta Davis' passing, as well as I mentioned earlier in the show, her lovely mother is on the call as well. But tell us a little bit maybe about one other, and then we'll go to
Staff Sergeant Carletta Davis was 34 years old when an IED attack occurred at Tal al-Dahab, Iraq. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. She was the mother of three sons, and she died on November 5th, 2007. Her story, again, when these things occur, more often than not, it is these dreadful IED attacks in Iraq. In that year, 2007, they still had not gotten that problem solved or getting to the point where the risk was reduced. They created a new kind of vehicle and armor and things that they did not have at that point, I don't think, or they were not quite there yet. But as I said before, everybody who serves in the war, and I think she was a medical assistant, that is not what you would call the direct ground combat position that involves attacking the enemy, but it most certainly involves being in danger. Everybody is in danger in this war zone, and we honor and respect her and mourn for her loss. There were 17 women who were the parents of children under 18 years old, and she was one of them who gave her life for our country.
Well, speaking of Staff Sergeant Carletta Davis, we actually have her mother, Miss Lavada Napier, who's out of the Fairbanks, Alaska, Anchorage, Alaska area. We'd like to welcome you to Wealthy Sisters today, ma'am. How are you doing?
Yes, I'm blessed. I'm blessed and honored.
Yes,
and
yes. Well,
I definitely appreciate the you and all the people that keep her memory alive.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Well, we love for you to just, you know, share a little story or two about your daughter. We really, like we said, we see the names, and it means something when you see the names. It really means another when you're able to put a face with a name and to know that they were viable and had real lives. And tell us a little bit about her courage and some of the things you shared with me when we spoke on Friday.
Yes, well, I just know that she was always helpful. She was always interested in helping people. And the medical, being in the medic in Fort Lewis, I believe she held that position for about 12 years, stationed in Fort Lewis. And she just loved being a medical person where she could help people. And she always helped people that were in distress. It was always some type of trauma. And the Iraq and all the war and the trips she made, she would, you know, come back and explain and tell us about the children that were in danger. And she says, like, she would explain that about, you know, being in the twilight, like a Twilight Zone, the movie that used to come out in the 70s. She would talk about that, you know, she didn't want to always tell us the gory part of the task that she had to do, but she would always want people to do the right thing and not to be arguing over petty things. She said because there's so much other, there's so many other happy things that you could be doing. And she was always the family where around food, she would draw people with food. and she would always cook, and all of, you know, all the friends or wherever she lived in a military base or in a community nearby, she would draw people, and they would always consider her like the mom.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure she got that, honestly, by you just opening your restaurant there. What's the name of it again?
It's Zydeco Way Cafe, and it's out at Small Aircraft at area in Fairbanks International Airport.
Okay, so we have listeners all over the world. Definitely,
yes.
When you're in Alaska, to have to go by and visit.
Stop by and get some Cajun and some Southern comfort food.
Oh, wow. I bet that's really helpful being there as
Deborah?
Well. So, yes.
Deborah, could I ask Mrs. Napier?
Yes.
I'd like to ask her a question.
Yes, go ahead.
I'm so sorry for your loss. I noticed in one of the articles, I think it was the Associated Press, reported that before your daughter deployed, was it the third time, that she seemed to know something might happen. Could you tell more about that?
Yes, she, when she knew that she was going to be deployed, she started visiting relatives that she had always wanted to visit,
mm-hmm.
and she spent, I believe it was 2 weeks, a week before here in Fairbanks, and she sit down with me and talk with me, and she said, you know, Mom, she called me Mama, and she said, Mama, this trip is different. She said, this trip is different. I'm going to be attached with a unit out of Fort Drum. And she said, I just don't feel good about this at all.
Hmm.
And I just told her I'll be praying for her, and I pray for her protection and pray mm-hmm. that things go the way God would have them to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I just know that she didn't feel comfortable about it, and she managed to, the last person that she visited was her birth father, because Carletta had been adopted by my husband when she was 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And when she visited her natural father in Illinois, he was in the hospital with congestive heart failure. And she stayed a week with him, but she got to, you know, visit her dad, and she called me after she visited him and let me know that, you know, she got to spend some time with him.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Was that an infantry unit that she was attached with, or she wasn't assigned to the infantry unit?
No, she was assigned as a medic with the 10th Mountain,
mm-hmm.
and they were, from the explanation that was given to me, that they were going to retrieve the 22 bodies that they had, I guess, located in that name that I can't pronounce, Tala,
uh-huh.
whatever that name is, and that the convoy, it was a convoy of the Humvees, and she was riding in the military with MP, which is a young man that was from Alaska. One of the men were from Alaska.
Yes, one from the North Pole.
Yes, North Pole. Sternol, Stenoo.
Yes, Stenroos.
Yes.
Sergeant Derek Stenroos of North mm-hmm. Pole also killed in the attack, along with two other soldiers from Fort Drum's 1st Brigade Company.
Yes. And
wow.
The vehicle, I guess, ran over the IED and exploded.
Yeah.
So that was the information, you know, that had been given to me by the military.
Where were you when you heard the news?
I was at home.
Mm-hmm.
And when the two men, which is one is usually, I guess, a chaplain, and the other is usually an officer. And I had already seen that vision, two visions, them coming to the house and the explosion. I'd already seen those things. So I guess that was in January. So I had like 11 months to prepare for the reaction of them delivering the information.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we sit and talk, and I managed to get my telephone directory to try to call as many family members as I could so that they would not hear about her passing
mm-hmm.
over the television.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And while we were talking, and I just felt that those two officers were so scared. They were so scared to deliver that information, and I was wondering why. You know, why were they so afraid to deliver the information? And the chaplain explained to me on a different day, not at that particular time, but on another day, that I saw them at a different location, and I recognized, and I wanted to know why did they seem, you know, like they were going to either run or fight, whichever the fear, you know, when people get scared, they do different things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so the guy explained to me that, you know, when they deliver information about their loved ones, some people react different. And in one instance, a person took a baseball bat and wanted to beat the people that were delivering the information.
Mm.
And I just couldn't imagine by somebody lashing out at another person
mm-hmm.
is not going to change the information that's being delivered.
Right.
But
it's just
good
what
bad,
it represented.
Yeah.
Right. People respond differently to that type of information. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, when I was reading that about her having that sense that something was going to happen,
yeah.
and that it wasn't good. Was she that type of person that obviously followed instructions, or
yes.
you know, because when we think, I think Elaine, you mentioned this earlier about how
yeah.
I mean, used to corporate America. I mean, this is not something that we would do. We would just either quit, do something else,
yeah.
or get a lawyer to protest.
Culture
but,
of obedience. You cannot
yes.
have a military without everyone understanding at all times they follow orders. There
right.
are all kinds of regulations and rules and law that apply in the military. It has its own, in fact, its own legal code. It's called the UCMJ,
right.
Uniform
mm-hmm.
Code of Military Justice. And every person who raises their hand and joins the military subjects themselves to a different set of laws. And
yes.
so the duty that Carlita felt, even though she was so concerned about that deployment, she still
mm-hmm.
followed orders. She still got on the plane. And that's
yep.
what's so amazing to a civilian like me. I just stand in awe of this.
I do,
And I know I live near a military base, so I do have relationships where people that are active duty, and when they are given the orders that they're going to be deployed in a war zone,
mm-hmm.
I mean, one person in particular, I remember them going out, and they did not drink. They went out and got as drunk as they possibly could. They got in their vehicle, and they drove. And the civilian police stopped them and turned them over to the military.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And in civilian life, if you get in your vehicle and you drive, you will go to the jail. You go to, they take you to jail. But this person did everything in the civilian life that they possibly could do to go to jail on the civilian terms, but they were turned over to the military in order to, because they knew that they were in the military when they found out, and then they actually, that person actually did deploy and go to Iraq. They did not get the penalty of in the civilian world that you would get for DWI.
Well, that's right. The rules are different. The rules apply on base and off base around the clock.
Yes, 24/7. And that is one of the things that, you know, through our church, that we support the families and the military individual as far as letting the civilian person know that, you know, when people sign up for military, they are military 24/7, and we would take that person, if that person's income is $1,800 a month, and they got three children, and they're at Fort Wainwright, they are at hardship financially, and they're on call 24/7, so we would divide the 24/7 into the $1,800, and I think it's like $1.24 an hour or something, that we should support the family, the military family, 100%, because they're putting their life on the line, and yet they have to balance out this small pay in order to keep their family, you know, with clothing and transportation, and they still have to do the same thing that a civilian family would do. So we honor every family, and when they deploy, if they need their grass cut or if they're, you know, living in off base, we do everything that we possibly can to help that family balance out their daily chores while their spouse is gone, whether it's a male or a female. And we do have both. And even if we just cook them a meal and take it to them, or whatever needs to be done, their child hair needs to be braided or combed, or whatever needs to be done, we support them 100%.
That's wonderful.
Those are the things that when we're teaching people, whether it's children or adults, that we are responsible for our brother and sister. We are responsible. We need to help them in whatever way possible, whether it's picking up trash off the highway, or whether it's picking up trash out of somebody's yard, or whatever instance, to help that person.
Mrs. Napier,
right.
I'm looking at your tribute to your daughter that you wrote on the OurFallenSoldier.com webpage more than a year after her death, and counting the days beyond your earthly death date does not make the pain go away. It just pulls the scape from my wounded heart. Talking to my grandchildren is like medicine to ease the pain. Writing, reading, and talking about my daughter, Carlita, helps me to get a point in life to encourage others, encourage them to think about what actions to take toward each other. And you go on from there, and it's a beautiful tribute. How are the boys, by the way?
The oldest one, Trey, he graduated on May 28th this year. And
wonderful.
He is he's really from the point of when he first found out that his mother was not going to return. He was like on a down spiral. He was really, really, you know, and I prayed that, you know, God, please do something to help him understand that, you know, we are all going to go through that, but she just had to go at that point, and that I prayed that someone would come into his life that he could understand and move on from that point, but not forget his mother, but just have her in his heart that he can still do the things that his mom would have wanted him to do. And she always told them that, you know, you can go into any profession that you would like, but you have to pick something. You have to pick it. She said, I can't pick it for you. You have to pick it.
Mm-hmm.
And he has made the choice to be in the medical field. So
is that right?
He will be, his application went into University of Seattle. So he's going to follow the footsteps of his mom and dad because his dad works in the medical field also.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And the second child, he's in music. So he's 17. You got an 18-year-old, a 17-year-old, and then a 13-year-old, which will be 14 really soon.
Mm-hmm.
And they are always... when one of them, I call it stepping out the boat. When one of them step out the boat, the other one put his hand on his shoulder and say, you know, we're brothers and we are responsible for each other. And, you know, mom always told us that we have to make sure the other person is doing what they're supposed to do.
As well. That's wonderful. And you, and how is Mr. Davis as well?
How is he? He's mm-hmm. doing a whole lot better than mm-hmm. when it first, you know, hit his mind. And there is no time limit on grief, as
mm-hmm.
I found that out years ago. But he takes one day at a time, and mm-hmm. I visit with him, and he was concerned, and I could understand he was concerned as far as building a relationship with another woman. And, you know, I sit down with him and told him I love him as if
mm-hmm.
he was my son.
Mm-hmm.
And I approve of whoever you make the selection. Whoever you make the selection to build a relationship, I approve of it. Because
right.
you are here, and Coletta
right.
is on the other side. And
right.
I'm not telling you to forget Coletta, because I'm sure you can't forget her. She's in your heart. You cannot forget someone that you love.
Right.
However, if you truly love, you will always have room for as many people as you can possibly meet. You will always have her love there. And you can love someone else. I say, but you're going to have to make a choice and make some standards and do some things so that your life would halfway balance out. Can't just stay stuck remembering this stuff. It's like driving a car. You can't always look in the rearview mirror. You can
right.
glance at it every once in a while. But you got to stay looking forward for the other road signs. You can't just stop and just gaze into the rearview mirror because you will crash. There's no way you can stay balanced if you're always looking back.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful that you're able to do that. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yes. And, you know, that's what Coletta would have wanted, because she was not a selfish person. She just was not selfish at all.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
she would always get upset when other people wanted to be selfish, and she would try to explain to them, don't try to haul all the toys. Just when she was a kid, she would always be the mediator between her brother and sister. You don't have to fight over the lotion. It's three balls of lotion. Why y'all fighting over that one bottle of lotion?
Now, was she your oldest in the
yes.
order of your children?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Oldest.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she was always, you know, Mama, I just don't understand why they're so selfish. Why can't they just play with the toys and not argue over them?
That's wonderful.
Well, I think
what
it's
type of support?
It's just amazing that you can share her story with others. I can't imagine the grief that comes from losing a daughter in the war. The only thing rivaling it is losing a son in the war. But there's just some of these stories are just so heartbreaking when you read about what happened at the services with the families. Mm-hmm. One young woman who struck me, and I still remember and think of her from time to time. She's buried at Arlington PFC, Sam Huff. That is her name, Sam. I almost missed her as one of the women who were killed in the war. All of 19 years old, and at her funeral they played that song, Butterfly Kisses. I mean, just thinking about it makes you cry. The other day when Deborah called, a general who I know, his daughter had been killed in Afghanistan, similar circumstances with like Carletta. And when he got the news, she had been at West Point. She was one of the overachievers in her class. And a good friend of his, who was also a general, when I asked whether he would like to be on this program, said no, because he's still not over that grief. The whole family withdrew for almost a year.
But you never get over.
You don't get over
grief.
It.
No, you never. And I tried to use the words to explain to another lady when I talked to her on, I believe it was on Friday or Saturday, and she was at the restaurant and she wanted to place an order, and she saw the picture that I had up of my daughter and the three sons. And I used the words, she works in the forestry, and I tried to explain to her, you have seen a person with third-degree burns over 100% of their body, and she told me yes. I said, well, you multiply that by 100, and the pain that comes from that, it really gives a small example of how hurtful it is to lose a child in a war that most of us don't understand. We don't understand that. And then live here in the United States, and we go about our daily chores, shopping, playing, swimming, whatever, and then you have that hurt. It's like your heart has been burnt, third-degree burned, and everything, whether it's a cologne smell, whether it's the laughter that sounds like Carletta, or whether it's a music song, or whether it's a blouse that we shared, we used to mail each other clothes that we liked. I would say it's time for you to mail my blouse back to me. I mean, you've had it for months. Why do you ever mail my blouse? And I said, it's time for me to mail it to Amanda. I mean, what's up? Why can't you just mail the blouse? And you know, it's stuff like that that brings back that memory. And then if you cried as much as I did when she was 5 years old and she went off to kindergarten. And I drove her to kindergarten. I wouldn't let her get on the bus. And then I stood there at the kindergarten door with my head glued to that little glass window in the door. And I was like just crying. I was just boo-hooing. I was just so hurtful. I was crying, you know. My child, she don't need me anymore. She saw me at the window, which I was trying not to let her see me, and she got up out of her seat and went to the teacher's desk, to the teacher who was sitting at the desk, and I guess she asked the teacher if she can go to the door or whatever, and she come to the door, and she said, Mama, you can go home now.
I'm okay.
And I was so embarrassed. I was like,
you have a question?
She understands.
Oh, wow.
But so And then people looked at me at her service because we had a going home service for her here. And I was so happy. And I just say, you know, this is a celebration. In Louisiana, when a person dies, you do not cry. You celebrate. If you're crying, it's because you're happy that they have passed over and you're celebrating. And I told them, this is a celebration. This is not a sad, gloomy, this is not a sad day.
Right.
And they never saw me crying.
Mm-hmm.
And after that service took place, there was a lady that I'm friends with her, and she lost her husband 2 years prior to my daughter, and she would be crying every day. She just made herself sick. She would cry. She was back and forth to the doctor. She was crying. And when she went to that service, and she said she saw me not crying, and she says, what was it? Why didn't I cry? I said, well, you know, crying is not one of the ways that I grieve. It's just not the way I grieve. Mm-hmm. I say some people have to cry to grieve. There's nothing wrong with crying. And she said, well, my husband been dead for 2 years, and every time I think about him, I start crying. I said, that's perfectly healthy. I mean, you cry. Mm-hmm. I said, me, I don't cry. I just work. I get up and I do stuff. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you know, if I go shopping, and I know Coletta likes purple, I said, well, you know, she would love those purple flowers. I'm just going to make those little purple flowers, put them in the container, and take them up to her site. That's my part of grieving. But mm-hmm. other people, I might write a poem, or I might cut out paper dolls, or whatever comes to comfort me, that's how I get comfort. But by crying is not... That's not me. There's nothing wrong with me not crying. It's the fact that I vent in other ways. I do cry, but that is not one of my main things to do. Yeah, that's not me. Or I might one of the things that I do is I'm in the grocery store, and I see military people in those fatigued uniforms with the little beret hats on. Mm-hmm. And I think about Coletta wearing that. I've seen her wear those outfits. Mm-hmm. And if they're in the grocery line behind me, whatever they're buying, I just pay for it. Mm-hmm. And then I tell the lady at the register, if there's any change stuff, I would just give it to them. Mm-hmm. And I just respect them for taking... And their life, because they're donating their life.
Their life, that's right.
For us. They're donating their life for us. And
what a blessing you are.
The civilians that don't realize that, I'm sorry they don't realize that, because people they're donating their life. They're giving their life because they could be out swimming every Tuesday, or they could be out going to crochet classes or their bridge clubs or whatever it is that people do in the non-war zone, as we call the United States.
Well, I want to. We have about 5 minutes left in the show, and I do have one caller on the line that might have a quick question here. Hello, a caller from California.
Good morning.
State your name and where you're calling from.
This is Czak, and I'm calling from out of Los Angeles, California.
Yes. And what is your comment or question today?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment. Like the mother said, most civilians don't understand the sacrifice that people have made. So I really wasn't expecting you to have a show on Memorial Day. When I seen what the topic was, I said, you know what, I want to check that out, because so many sacrifices are made for this day. And for most of us, it's just family, fun, food, friendship. But it's really It's a historic moment to remember, just to remember those, but to acknowledge the ones that's living.
Right.
For their
right.
daily dedication to it. So I just wanted to commend you and the mother and say God bless her and the grandchildren as well as the young man that's going to school in Seattle.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. We appreciate you calling in, C-Zac, as well, and listening to our show. Thank you.
That was a very nice thought.
Yes,
every year, we usually watch the Memorial Day concert that occurs in Washington, D.C. on the Mall, and they have actors who portray personal letters from people who have served, people who have been injured, family members, just wonderful stories. And then yesterday, as they've had in previous years, they have the real people who are being portrayed by actors such as Gary Sinise and Diane Weiss and others. They just do a wonderful job with that memorial service. It's not a service, it's a concert. And B.B. King kind of, you know, rocked it up too. But it's well worth watching every year. If you missed it yesterday, either look it up or make sure you don't miss it next year.
Yes. Is that one? I think I saw something on Facebook about that.
Yes, it's on PBS every year.
Well, I want to say thank you to you, Elaine, for coming on our show and just being such a great asset to us today and for everything that you're doing
honor.
With your organization. Yes, and also please give your website again.
Yes, www.cmrlink.org. We deal with the personnel social issues. We've got lots of controversy on our webpage. But deep down, it comes down from a concern for the men and women who volunteer to serve. They put so much at risk, and I just don't like their job to be made more difficult or more dangerous than it needs to be.
Correct. And also want to let everyone know, if you go to Facebook, we have the event there, and we also have on the page the tribute to Black women. And they have on their website as well, they have a special piece about fallen soldiers there as well. So definitely want to put you in contact with that site as well. And then, Ms. Napier, we want to thank you just for being such an inspiration. You are just truly an example of how one should live their life of peace and forgiveness. And we thank you for raising such a phenomenal woman in your daughter, and blessings to you continuously and your family.
Yes, and I give all of that glory to the scriptures, to God.
Thank you. Well, I wanted to close
thank
out
you.
The show and having the list here that we have from your site, and I'd like to be able to read as many of the names as possible. Would you like to read some of those names as well, Elaine?
You mean from the list?
Yes, from the list.
Well, there's quite a few. There's 123 of them.
Yeah,
every one of them has a special story. The names are very familiar to me, and many of them are minority women. One in particular who comes to mind, beautiful faces, the women who serve. There's some wonderful photographs, and I always try to make sure that I see at least one photograph. And some of them, the circumstances of their death still somewhat in question, don't really know exactly what happened. In Fallujah, there were three who were killed in an attack on a truck convoy. Horrible burns occurred there. And in your heart, you think about that story and you remember that it happened in June of 2005. These stories don't go away. I hope that people will look up the names. I don't have all the stories linked to the names. But just go to Google and you look them up and you see more about each one of them and how they gave so much. And your heart goes out to their families.
It does. Well, we have actually run out of time, and I want to, again, thank you. We'll close out the show and remind everyone we'll be here again next week, same time, 12 noon Eastern. Our special guest will be Shirley Darden, and she's an educator. Definitely want to tune into that. But this has been a great show again. Thank you, ladies. And
thank you
to all the men and women who serve us.
This has been another episode of Wealthy Sisters, brought to you by The Professional Black Woman, turning your concepts into cash. Join Deborah Hardnett, our host next week, as she interviews another powerful, progressive, and positive sister, and visit us on the web at www.wealthysisters.com. That's www.wealthysisters.com.